Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Pipe, you are on the road this week because you are a very important person, and you are in Dallas for the Southern Baptist Convention. And I can only imagine that that's just kind of a mix of Mardi Gras and like Super Bowl week and all those things rolled into one. Am I right on that, Piper?
Yeah, I mean, you got the 4th of July because there's a lot of red, white, and blue going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like all of those things except with sweet tea and fried food instead of anything adult beverage oriented.
Fantastic. And that's as it should be, for the record, you know.
Yes.
The official statement is
that we endorse that position, I guess. All of the waiters and waitresses in the city of Dallas resent that position extremely.
Because, oh, for sure. Their tips are going way down this week.
Although I did see, I think it was Beth Moore tweeted, who like she tweeted to the waiters and waitresses of Dallas and said, before you get upset at the lack of alcohol being purchased, just remember nobody eats like Southern Baptist, and they will make up for it in appetizers and multi-course dinners.
Dude, and desserts, man. They're always going in on the dessert.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, when the waiter comes around and goes, anybody want dessert? There's like the hesitation and then give us the menu. So,
and see, that's the good thing, because these Southern Baptist pastors, they're not on any kind of like kooky hipster diet. I mean, they're going all in. They're going apps. They're going desserts. They're going fried stuff. You know, there's no kind of like quinoa salad and water going on here.
Yeah, they're not doing Whole 30. They're going to do like the whole hog. They're going to do the
whole 30 items on the menu.
That's right.
So it's a little different.
I'll do all 30 pages of the Cheesecake Factory menu. That's what I'll do. That's my Whole 30.
Absolutely, man. Well, Piper, speaking of business and commerce, we have a unique sponsor this week. This is a sponsor that is near and dear to my heart as a professor at Union University. So our sponsor this week is the Union University Journalism Program. So Pipe, I'm going to give you a break, a little vacation from doing the promo read.
Yes.
And I'm going to take this one all by myself. And this one is less of a promo read and more of just a story. So last school year, springtime, I got a random email from a dude, and he was from Texas. He was going to college somewhere in Texas, and he said that he was a listener to the Happy Rant. He was a huge Happy Rant fan, and he asked if he could road trip up to Union, if he were to do that, if we could go to lunch and he could sit in on a class. And of course, I said yes. He came up, sat in on my creative nonfiction class, and this fall he's going to be coming to Union as a student.
So he's transferring?
He's transferring. Yeah, he's coming up to Union. He's going to major in journalism. So if this dude is listening, shout out to you, man.
Is that because you stood on your desk and did "Oh, Captain, My Captain"?
Dude, I did. I did "Oh, Captain, My Captain," which is a thing that I do every week in my classes. So if you sign up for Union University Journalism, you can expect a lot of "Oh, Captain, My Captain," a lot of awkward poetry readings. But seriously, it is a great program. When I got to Union 3 years ago, we had 3 majors. Now we have 15. We were recently ranked the second best Christian journalism program in the country.
Wow.
So beat out a lot of great programs for that. And we are doing amazing things. We are chasing some school in the Pacific Northwest that I hadn't heard of. It wasn't one of the usual ones. It wasn't like, you know, Biola or
Seattle Pacific
or whatever. Yeah, it was one I hadn't heard of. So, but yeah, we beat Wheaton. We beat Taylor. So our 2 alma maters, Piper, and some other pretty great schools on that list.
Take it to them, Ted.
Yeah, we're taking it to them, man. I'm proud of what we're doing. We do a beautiful print magazine every fall and spring. So twice a year they get to have some long form creative nonfiction in print. We do daily journalism, daily news journalism every day via our website, cardinalandcream.org. So if you are interested in Union journalism, visit uu.edu or hit me up at tkluck@uu.edu, and we would love to have you in for a visit. I run my journalism program like a high-end college football program, Piper, in that every new signee—
You pay for talent?
We pay for talent, so you'll get a Corvette and lots of spending money every month. But no, we do a national signing day event, so we get everybody swagged up.
And just to be clear, you don't run it like Rick Pitino ran his, right?
No, I do not run it like Rick, or really anyone at Louisville, to be clear.
Good.
So
just wanted to clear the air on that.
It's the opposite of a Louisville type college sports program. But no, we do get everyone swagged up in Union journalism gear. We throw a national signing day bash for all of my new majors. And it's truly a great place to prepare for grad school, prepare for a career in traditional print journalism, online journalism, even writing for the for-profit and nonprofit sector in communications. It's just a great place to train for that, to have a lot of fun. We've got a growing program. So check us out at uu.edu.
Well, and I had a professional intersection with one of your students maybe a week ago. So Lifeway brings in summer interns, paid internships for college students. And I was talking to a coworker, and they just mentioned that their intern is one of your students and just raved about her.
Emma McLeod, right? Yeah. Superstar in our program. So, and she was super pumped to get that Lifeway internship. So
the proof is in the students. And an unbiased person said that she was awesome. And so apparently everything you just said is true. So
it is true, man. She is awesome. And we have the best students, man. Our students do amazing work, and they're good kids. And you should hire them. And then you should also send your kids to Union to study journalism with me. But boys, we have we have a variety of topics to get to this week. Some very weighty, some a little more lighthearted. So before we get into that, pour yourself a cup of Lagares Roasters coffee. I just spoke with one Heck Lagares yesterday morning, boys. I had a little meeting with Heck about how to further expand his coffee empire. So he's growing the business. He has some great blends for sale at LagaresRoasters.com.
And tea. Don't forget that.
And tea. That's right. I always forget the tea because I'm a coffee guy and not a tea guy. But there is a Lagares Roasters Lumberjack Happy Rant Blend Tea. And the old standby, the coffee of all coffees, the Lagares Roasters Happy Rant Signature Blend. So pour yourself a cup of that, and let's get into this, boys. We have had two pretty high-profile celebrity suicides within the last week or two. So designer Kate Spade, food entrepreneur, and TV personality Anthony Bourdain. And it's been really interesting to read about these. And obviously, it's sad whenever anyone takes their life. Obviously, it's sad whenever a life is lost. And I think the one that hit me the hardest over the last year or so was Chris Cornell, the frontman for Soundgarden. He was I was a huge fan of Cornell's and still am. But these two have generated a lot of heat online, a lot of heat on social media. There are people that are even kind of crying conspiracy and saying that perhaps they were murdered. So what do you guys make of this? Big R, I know you and I have discussed stuff like this in the past. What's your read on this sitch, man?
I don't know. I'm not too keyed in on the Kate Spade thing. So I've read a little bit more about the Bourdain thing since it broke. Bourdain was, he was pretty brilliant at what he did. He was really just a great storyteller. I think the thing that he did was he came from the Food Network, and he did this thing that you were kind of led to believe was centered around food. It actually really wasn't. It was really centered around people and travel and him going into these, different countries, these places that everybody dreams of going into, and then gathering all these people from these different kind of cultures that had very different opinions, on life and politics than even he had. And he would sit down with these people. He would ask them just brilliant questions, and he would kind of get into the heart of who they were and where they were and what it looked like to exist and live, in the place that they called home. So I think that was one of the most compelling things about Bourdain. And he came off just like a really, he was this multi quadrillionaire, right? But he came off like somebody that was super relatable. And he also kind of wore a lot of his, he was kind of a cranky guy. And now, of course, we found out that he, struggled with depression. But you kind of got that vibe anyways. You watched what he was doing. And so I think, on one hand, everybody is shocked, whenever we hear of like one of these suicides break again. On the other hand, when you kind of go a little bit below the surface and you think of a guy like Bourdain, a guy that struggled with just, crazy drug abuse in his earlier years, you're not so surprised in some ways. This is what surprised me. What surprised me, especially when we think about the evangelical world, at least the tribe that we associate with, there's been such an outpouring of grief about him. I was just kind of shocked about that. Because I didn't think that everybody, I don't know how many, it's not like it's not like I brought out my stats and said, oh, how many people watch, Parts Unknown. But like, I was surprised at.
Dude, so evangelicals are outpouring about Bourdain. That surprises me too, I guess.
That's what I've seen. Yeah. And again, you know, he's like, he's not somebody that we would have aligned with on any level, right?
Right,
at the same time, I'm just surprised. I've just heard, it's just been nonstop almost, you know, sort of this, you know, people tweeting about how sad they are about Bourdain, which is a good thing, obviously. Yeah. But it was just kind of, it was kind of surprising to me.
Dude, I think Bourdain is, go ahead. No, I think he's one of those pieces of like secular pop culture that Christians feel completely okay about consuming. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
It was food. It was travel. It's stuff that we feel okay about being decadent about. And even though he was, you know, a little bit edgy and a little bit profane at times, it was just one of those things that I guess Christians made their peace with. I was actually a huge fan of his writing. I've read a couple of his memoirs, and they're really lively, man. Really fun to read.
Yeah. Big M has read Kitchen Confidential like 4 times. Like, she loves it. But I always still think of like Bourdain. The thing that kind of surprises me is, you know, the outpouring of grief. But like, to me, I still looked at it. I know he was popular, but I still looked at him as being like slightly underground and not like so widely watched or read. Yeah. Even though he was like, he was, but he wasn't, right? He was to a certain segment. So to see all these like evangelicals that are like kind of coming out saying, oh, I loved him, I loved his writing, I loved his show, that just surprised me.
Well, dude, that and like, you know, as much as I enjoyed Bourdain as an entertainer, there seemed to be a little bit of a lack of pathos in all that. Like there was not necessarily the invitation to connect on the heart level. So yeah, like somebody having a,
right,
you know, a real kind of heart level response to this is kind of an interesting move. Pipe, what do you make of it? And specifically, what do you make of, you know, some of these rumblings that maybe these deaths and maybe the timing and the manner of these deaths, they may not be suicides. What do you make of this kind of conspiracy angle?
I think the conspiracy side of things, I mean, I'm as in the dark as anybody else who's not investigating these things. But my guess is that stems from people who can't fathom a rich, successful person who has, especially like in Bourdain's case, he gets to do all the stuff we wish we could do. Like, part of the reason people love him is because they live vicariously through him.
Oh, most definitely.
He has the coolest job. He gets to eat and meet people in their context and tell stories and sort of be part of these things. And who wouldn't love that? I mean, I would sign up for that, especially, I mean, I'll take a third of whatever he got paid, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I think there's an aspect of like how there has to be something else going on here. Cause how could a person who has everything take their own life? And then there's always just the internet is a place where idiots can say things for free. And that's where conspiracy theories come from. So I wouldn't put a ton of stock in those because it's sadly not shocking when successful people take their lives because the thing that has struck me the most about this is the prominence that it's given to the awareness of mental illness and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, I look at it and I just go, but that's not the answer. It's not the whole answer.
Right.
I believe completely in the need for mental health professionals and medication and all of those things. But the world and the people talking about this give no spiritual answers whatsoever, you know?
Right.
And
right.
So the darkness that a person has to be in to say there is no reason to keep living, even when their bank account is in the, you know, whatever, 12 figures.
Right.
And they have all of this. I think to me, that's the most stark thing about all of this is the gap between, I think that the rising awareness of mental health is a really good thing. And that's going to fall short too. And so I think that's the thing that both Christians and secular people alike are just – they're still only talking about mental health, not spiritual darkness. And to me, like that's where it comes from in part. And I think it's a complex thing. But yeah, I don't know. That has struck me as much as anything. And it's a really hard thing to address because people don't do nuance very well. Which means when you try to say it's both and, you know, there's absolutely a mental health aspect and depression is very real, darkness is very real, but spiritual emptiness is very real and one doesn't supersede the other. You kind of have to deal with both and people aren't good at that.
Yeah, so let's stay there for a minute, if you don't mind. And Big R, you're a man of the cloth, so you can speak to it from that angle. And Pipe, you and I are in media, so maybe we can speak to it from that side of things. But, you know, looking at Bourdain especially, but really both of them, I mean, they were both creative. They both had a media presence. They both had huge audiences. They both had an incredible platform. And at face value, those are all things that we are chasing. And those are all things that a whole bunch of people in our tribe are also chasing. So time and time again, we're given these stark examples through these celebrity suicides of how unsatisfying all that stuff is. Yet, you know, the three of us and probably lots of our listeners spend a huge chunk of our day chasing exactly those things. So, I mean, I mean, you hate to be reductive here and just tack some kind of a Sunday school lesson onto it, but is there something in this for us, for our tribe, for our listeners? You know, what does this make you guys think about? And Big R, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I mean, not to be overtly obvious. I mean, success is just a ladder, right? And the problem with it and the problem with any level of success, whether it's fame, notoriety, or even, you know, financial success. I mean, it's just you get to the next rung and there's always another one. Like you're never, there's always someplace else. There's always something higher. There's always something more to attain. And the problem is that we get addicted to these things. And when we get to one level, the level that we were trying so hard to get to, it just makes us all that much more hungry and thirsty to get to some other level with it. The problem, I think the seductiveness of it is that there's always all these different things, especially with what we do, to try to justify what we're doing as being, well, this is for the good of the people. This is for the gospel. This is for God's glory. But at the same time, I mean, if we're ever really honest, we like getting where we're going. And there's something that is real satisfying about that to us. And it's ultimately
satisfying.
We think it's satisfying. It's a false satisfaction because, again, once we get to that place that we dreamed of getting, we realize that it's not enough because it's never enough. And, you know, obviously, you know, our beliefs would tell us, you know, intellectually that, well, of course it's not enough. And there's no limit to anything that's going to ultimately satisfy us. But yet we keep pushing it because there's something tangible about it. There's something that's in focus about it, that when we see one place that we've gotten to, it makes the next place that much more visible to us. And so I just think we're all very fooled. And I think and I think we can try again. It's so tricky in the place that we're at with it, because we have all these justifications, because it is a lot of it is for a certain amount of good that's undeniable and unarguable, but it's also feeding us too. It's also feeding our souls. And so how do we get around that, and how do we justify that, and how do we do it in a way that is not just putting us in the same position that Bourdain is? Yeah. But it's a position that we can somehow talk around a little bit more easily. I would say it's really dangerous, to be honest.
No, I agree. I totally agree. And Pipe, I'll let you vamp on the same thing, but I'll add this question for maybe all of us to address. Like, what's been the most, as you look at your career, as a writer, as a creative, whatever, like what's the most satisfying thing you've done? Like, can you think of something that's given you, you know, the closest thing, I guess, to true satisfaction?
Well, I'll jump on the train that Ronnie was running down the tracks, because I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said, so I'm not going to add a ton to it. But the thing that comes to mind as we think about, especially sort of doubling platform and success and ministry, which is a really dangerous thing, because platform is really just a temptation. And it's an easy to justify thing, because, you know, it's very easy to say, well, a bigger platform is greater opportunity to do good. And there's truth in that. It's also a greater height from which to fall. It's a greater temptation to pride. It's an easier thing to think you're better than everybody else. And it's a much easier place to feel empty, because the bigger the platform, the higher the platform, there's no inherent, anything for the soul in that. And so the question that I've had to learn to ask is, you know, if this went away, and, you know, we're like this minuscule little podcast. We love to talk about how big we are, but we're not. and we all know that, which is why we joke about it. If this podcast went away, would I feel empty, or would I just, like, that would be okay, because I'm not like banking my happiness on it. If I never wrote another book, would I feel like I'd lost a piece of myself, or would I feel like, okay, there's another opportunity? I think those are questions you have to ask about, like, how much are you hanging on success? And I think a lot of people in ministry, like famous ministry people, are wrapped up in the success of what they do, the numeric success, the financial success, the exposure success, as opposed to, you know, whatever fruit God is actually bringing about. The numbers do not equate to what God is doing. We like to make that equation, but it's not necessarily true. So I think that's a big part of it when it comes to sort of the Christian spin on success and how easy it is to justify the pursuit of fame, numbers, sales, whatever it is. In response to your other question about the thing that has made me sort of feel the greatest level of success, for me, it's been learning how to find success in completing something. So just doing the work as well as I can. You know, I've never felt totally satisfied with anything I've done, because there's always room for improvement. But when my first book came out, I remember I was super excited about it, and it came out. And then, like, the next day I woke up and realized life had not changed at all. Like, yeah. I was the same person that I had been when I went to bed the night before. And so being a published author was just it wasn't anything. It was, it was a task that was completed ultimately.
And that
sucked for a little while. And then, and then I just had to come to the realization that you don't write to find yourself or to be a different person or to like that. Right. That's drug use. It's just it's the drug of publication. Whereas if you write for the satisfaction of the work and the communication of an idea or a story or truth, there's a lot of contentment in that. And so for me, it was my third book was more satisfying than either of the first two. And it sold worse than either of the first two, because it was the one that it was the hardest for me to write in a hard season of life. And I completed it, and I think it was okay. I think it was good. I did my best on it. And that felt like success to me at that point, which is a really different thing than numbers or exposure or platform or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. What about you, Bigar?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I want to hear from you too, T. But there's something when you release things, right? Whether it's music or publications, there's something about releasing something, and there's an initial thrill to it that becomes very, very unsatisfying, because it's almost like. I always like equate it to food when there's a food item that you just absolutely love, and you find that the more you eat it, and if you eat it to a place where it's in too close succession to itself, you end up like losing your taste for it, and you don't love it as much because you're not spreading it out.
That's a great analogy.
But it's like that for me, in that because I've released so much product, it becomes like just an incredible addiction until you realize I'm not getting and again, what you said, Pipe, is so true. It's like, it is a drug. And so I'm just doing it now to be normal. Like, I don't even remember what it was like to have the thrill of it. I'm just trying to stay on this like moderately low level high that actually isn't even a high anymore. It's just become my normal. And I think, and so even, you know, so on, when you take it to another level, it's actually no different. It's just guys are getting bigger numbers and more people. And guess what? There's somebody above them that are getting bigger numbers and more people and bigger platform. But it's sort of this thing where it just never ends. You know what I mean? You're always going to be thirsty. You can never drink enough water today to where you're not going to need to take another sip tomorrow. And I think it's just so problematic. But it does give you that low level high that is so addicting. It's incredibly addicting. And we as people, I think, as humans, we are incredibly, incredibly sensitive to that. And I don't think we realize how sensitive to it we are at all.
Yeah, that's a really good word, man. And that's so true. And yeah, it gives us the false sense that we matter, you know?
Yeah.
That we matter, that we're important. And you're right, man. That is very addictive. But much like drugs, much like food, much like, you know, nicotine, whatever, you know, the the buzz wears off and then you have to just keep doing it to be normal. I think for me, the very first thing I ever got published was probably the most satisfying. And it was a couple of poems. We had been living overseas. We were living in Lithuania right after undergrad. And I wrote a bunch of poetry. And when we got home, I started to submit it. And I ended up getting a couple of poems published in this thing called the Blue Collar Review, which in retrospect was probably like a Workers of the World Unite sort of communist rag. So it probably got me on some blacklist. But I remember they sent me like a letter on their letterhead, and they sent me several copies of the magazine saying that I'd been published. And my wife actually framed the letter for me. She was so excited. She put the letter in a frame, and it was huge, man. It was a thrill, and it was a thrill in the moment, but it was also a thrill of like, this is just the beginning. You know, there's a sense that like this rocket ship is going to take off, and who knows where it's going to go. And really that did happen, but it was never as fun as it was the first time, you know. Yeah. And, you know, now being mid-career, like we all are, I think there's, I don't know if it's like this for you, this is an interesting question, but you know, for me, there's much less joy in the anticipation. I get much less excited about, you know, book proposals or projects on the horizon or whatever. They just feel more like, you know, this is rote. This is what should be happening. And I don't know if it's like that for you. Is it like that for you guys?
I think so. Yeah. I think for me, I mean, I see people on social media, they put out their book and, you know, they compare it to like, you know, the gestation of a child and things like that. And
which to me is just the dumbest thing ever.
You know, I feel the same way, but I also am like, okay, well maybe that's a very different experience than for me.
Yeah.
But it is more for me than just like doing the work. Like if I was a writer for a living, then I think that would be more of a, that'd be more the feeling of it. But it is just it is very much a like, this is the next thing I'm invested in. So it's something I care deeply about. It's an investment. I'm passionate about the communication aspect of it. But yeah, it's not the anticipation of like, I don't have the anticipation of a high on anything I write, whether it's an article I submit or a blog post. And even when something kind of, on those rare occasions when something sort of blows up, a post goes viral or whatever, like that feels hollow to me. Because I mean, in the moment as it's happening, you know, and I'm sort of checking the numbers, I kind of look at myself from the outside and go, that does not mean anything. Like those numbers don't mean anything. The clicks don't mean anything. The comments don't mean anything. Yeah. Not in an identity or any sort of fulfillment standpoint.
Dude, that's a truly great point, and I totally agree. And I wonder if, you know, for Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, that began to set in, you know, like this new bag that I've created, or, you know, this new show that I launched or whatever, like this truly means nothing in the grand scheme of things. And I wonder if that's the chasm, you know, that's the deep chasm of depression for someone who's probably a little maudlin and inclined to it anyway, as a lot of us are who are, you know, in creative fields. I wonder if, you know, for a Christless person, I would think what you just described, Piper, would be pretty devastating, you know, because it's low key devastating to me and I know Christ, you know, so I can only imagine, you know, for someone without scripture, without the gospel, without hope, man, that must just be a killer, literally.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking in the face, you're staring in the face, everything that is supposed to make you feel successful, happy, fulfilled. So you're looking at the dollars, you're looking at your next travel itinerary, you're looking at the menu in front of you, you're looking at the creation you just did that's going to sell, you know, tens of thousands of units, and none of it feels good. You have to have something else, because otherwise the next question is, what else is there?
And if
you struggle with depression in a very real way to begin with, then it's a real steep decline.
Yeah, and I realize we're going like really glum in this episode, but I have a follow-up question to that, and I'm curious, just as a friend to you guys, I think it's my age maybe, but I really feel that on a lot of levels. Like at some level, I feel like I've kind of had every great meal that I've wanted to have, and I've seen most of the great movies, and I've listened to a lot of the great records, and you know, I've experienced almost everything in sports as a athlete, a coach, and a fan that I've wanted to experience. And I'm like, man, I'm in the middle of my life. You know, what do I do with the rest of it in light of what I just said? Like, do you guys, A, do you understand what I'm saying? And B, like, do you feel any of that at all? I'll throw it to you first, Big R.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when I'm at my, you know, I think when I'm at a place where I, man, I'm, you know, I'm very, you know, I tend to be introspective anyway, but when I'm really, what you just described, when I'm looking at all these things, all these products that I've released, which really have served to sort of like form my identity more than I would like to admit, but they yeah, have. Sure. There's a tendency to look around and go, hey, it doesn't matter, you know, I can release 20 more products this year, and I already know what that's like. And even if I release a product that is going to be more successful than another product, at the end of the day, it's not going to shift who I am in a way that's going to allow me, you know, any sort of sense of, you know, completedness.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something sobering about that, because there's a part of me that still believes it's kind of going to. So even though I can sit here and say, no, it doesn't. And I'm telling you right now, I don't feel that way. There's a part of me that chases after it in the sense of thinking, but maybe that will, maybe there's a possibility that if this goes there instead of where it usually goes, it will give me that sense of wholeness and completedness that I still want even just a tiny piece of. I want to experience that.
Dude, I totally agree with that.
So even though intellectually I know we can assent to that place that we know is true, there, I think that in all of us, because we're not perfect and we're still being refined and sanctified, that we're still going after it, even if it's – hopefully the percentage shrinks. So see, I think the disillusionment is good. It's shrinking, but I still think there's enough of it there that keeps us going after it in the same exact way that Bourdain was going after it.
Yeah, so Pipe, you're a little bit younger. You're maybe – you know, a decade behind me and Big R in terms of all this stuff. Like, do you feel that? Do you feel a sense of, you know, everything, almost everything I've wanted to do, I've done?
No, not in the same way, but not in a, I think you're wrong way. I think it's just a different perspective. I resonate with what you're saying. The difference for me is I still have a lot of things that I would like to do, but by observation of other people and recognition of just experiences in my own life, I think I've set a different bar of expectations, you know? So I look at the things I would like to accomplish. So books I would like to write, creative things I would like to take on that maybe are more far-fetched or riskier, or, you know, I don't have a ton of professional aspirations in terms of that's not the ladder I'm dying to climb. It's much more on the creative side of the, or places like that I'd like to travel to, but recognizing that every time I have hung my hopes on something, it's disappointed me. You know, you go to a restaurant and it's about as good as it gets. But if you are hoping for a life-changing meal, no meal is life-changing. If you're hoping for the best brisket in the world here in Texas and you get spectacular brisket, you're going to be disappointed. I've learned to, or I am learning is probably a better way to put it, to say, There's good in the experience of, and it doesn't need to be a profound life-changing thing. It's just sort of the appreciation of the thing itself. So appreciation of delicious brisket, even if it's not the best brisket, or the completion of a book, even if it's not a, you know,
it doesn't set me up for life financially or whatever.
You know, if it never earns back its advance or whatever, you know, there is satisfaction in that. So no, I have not done everything I want to do, but I am learning not to that doesn't depress me in the way that I think it did a couple of years ago, where I felt like I was chasing, because I had sort of the young man's like, I have so much left to accomplish. Yeah. And then I just kind of realized I don't have anything left to accomplish. I have kids. Mm-hmm. I have a church. Mm-hmm. I have a job. Like, I have everything I need. And that's all an opportunity to do a good job at it. Yeah. And anything else that I get to do is sort of gravy. And so do my best at it and find happiness in it, but not hang my hopes on it.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I think that, I mean, I would say definitely there's still, and Big T, you would say this. I mean, I definitely still have aspirations. I think what's shaped my aspirations now are actually like the expectations, right? Because you have your expectations mature when they've been met in certain ways over the years. And so really, I think you can almost have better aspirations because of the way your expectations have shaped those things. And they can be a little more truthful. They can be a little more clear. And they can actually sort of reshape like your motivation behind even doing it at all. So I think as we go along, we can be at a better place with our aspirations, which is what sounds like what you're saying, Pipe, because you're seeing the broader picture with it, which is, I think, really important. It's not so narrow. It becomes wider.
And I'll tell you what I miss though. And you boys can speak to this too. I think when you're a young person, and I was way off the charts like this when I was young, what I loved more than any other thing was dreaming about whatever it is I was dreaming about. You know what I mean? Like, just thinking about what it would feel like if I got a book published, or thinking about making a movie, or, you know, playing football at a certain level or whatever. And like, the dream was such a form of entertainment for me almost, you know,
it was the fantasy.
That made me the happiest. And, you know, a function of being this age and having lived this life is that, you know, I no longer do that anymore. Like, I just don't do it because I can't do it. You know, I can't bring myself to do it anymore, because you live through enough of these publication cycles or whatever to know that, yeah, the reality never matches the dream. And so you just kind of teach yourself not to do it anymore. But I do miss doing it.
Reality kicks the idealism out of you if you're if you're paying attention.
Sure.
Oh, and I don't mean that. That's going to sound very depressing to people, especially those who are just sort of perky inherent optimists, which I'm very clearly not.
I don't think any of us are.
I mean, Ronnie would be the closest because he's more upbeat, but still super realistic.
No, I just lie.
that's good. It's good for pastors to lie about things. but I think if you. A dream has to be, you know, you learn to couch it where the dream is completion of something, or like the things that I dream about now are much more about, like I said earlier, the completion of something and feeling satisfied in that, as well as interacting with the people who appreciate it. If it's 11 people or 11,000 people, I don't know. I don't get to pick that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I get an email from somebody who reads one of my books and says, hey, this helped me in this conversation with my child or whatever, that's fulfilling. That's that's the reason I write. But I don't have the dreams of maybe this book is going to tip and hit the bestseller list, or maybe, you know, some famous person is going to endorse it and it's going to blow up, or idealism has polished those down to nothing.
Dude, and that's a really great word too. And just very earnestly for a second, like those emails truly do matter. Mm-hmm. And they tend to come at the right times. You know, for those of us, unlike Bourdain, who can't lean on our 12-figure bank account, I mean, those are the things that sort of give us encouragement in this business and keep us going. And I would dare say those are the things that maybe differentiate our careers from Bourdain's, in the sense that I don't know that anyone was writing him an email going, I love how you made fun of Putin on your food show. You know what I mean? Like our products are different. And yeah, those words, those emails, you know, the couple of minutes that we spend chatting in a lobby after Live in Louisville, like those things do make a difference. You know, those things are special. And, you know, I think, you know, given the scale that Bourdain was operating on, but also the kind of product that he put out, I mean, maybe there was a lack of that. I don't know. So we do appreciate it.
It's interesting to see the outpouring after the fact and how people talk about how it brings them together with other people, or how it taught them to appreciate other cultures or made them more open-minded. And, you know, maybe it would have made a difference had he heard more of that. And I'm not putting the blame on anybody, but just
– sure.
Maybe not. You know, I know, especially if he was fighting demons, depression, whatever it was, that's different. But the outpouring has said that he did have an impact on people at a more substantial way than like, hey, this is a great noodle dish in Vietnam, you know? There was something that moved people there.
Dude, I think life is difficult for those of us with large appetites. And I think you know, this may apply to the three of us. I know you guys pretty well, and we've traveled together, and we've had some experiences. And I know for myself, like, I just have a big capacity for enjoyment. And, like, I want to experience a lot of things and experience all of a lot of things. And, you know, for those of us who are believers, there's the double whammy of, you know, at some level that becomes sinful for us. So there are certain things that we're not supposed to experience. So that can be hard. But also the aspect that we talked about before where, you know, you've experienced a whole lot and like, what else is there? So I think there are both of those things operating for us that can be, you know, dangerous or difficult on an emotional level. Would you agree with that, Big R? I kind of see you as the same kind of guy. And I think a lot of our good times, like early in our friendship, were centered on some of those things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I think that you know, I mean, we all, especially, you know, given our personalities, and which is hilarious that Piper thinks I'm the most optimistic guy in the podcast. I would have said the opposite, but yeah.
this is dark if we both think the other is more optimistic.
Yeah. Who's the glummest guy on the podcast? This has become super
at some
fun
point. You just go, I know how glum I am, but I don't want to be publicly glum anymore.
Oh, sure.
I'll keep my glumness trapped inside, you know, which is a real healthy thing to do, by the way. But yeah, no, I think it's true, and I think part of why we do what we do when we do things that are open for public consumption is because we do have, like, there is a largeness there. There is something that you want people to absorb about what you do, and that's like a really that there's something unique in that, and there's something I think there's something that can, man, and that absorption that we crave. So we want to draw things in, and we want people to draw things from us. And we like that exchange. There's something really, really compelling about that exchange.
Sure.
And I think but I think that we are always guarded because we have the Holy Spirit inside of us saying, okay, be guarded. Hold on. You know that's not true. You know that's not true. And you know that's not true. And there's something that pulls us back, not always at the right moment, but eventually at the right moment. And then I think what you said is so true. When you have somebody like Bourdain who never has – you know, sort of that influence of the Spirit inside of him pulling him back. I mean, there's only one particular direction all of this absorption, both in and out, is going to go in his life. And so you kind of look at it and you go, well, how could it not ultimately end in hopelessness? You know, and I know that that's dark, but it's just that's reality. That's truth.
Dude, it is. And it's been so true of so many athletes and so many entertainers and so many people whose lives we would look at and go, you know, man, I would take that in a heartbeat.
The story is old, but it goes on.
It is.
It's a story with the same ending every time. It's just.
It is.
It's dark. Yeah.
It is dark, and yet, like, it's the very thing that we strive for, which to me is like the most interesting angle in all this. Like, it makes it super compelling.
Yeah, I mean, and the crazy thing is, you see people, they recognize it in the moment.
Sure.
They recognize that everything that these hopeless celebrities have doesn't fulfill. So
yeah.
Whether it's Bourdain or Kate Spade or Robin Williams or you know, the litany who have died of substance abuse, you know, Chris Farley and John Belushi being two of my favorite comedians who
sure.
I mean, and that's like they're the happiest people and the most miserable. And then you get Jim Carrey, who has said, you know, I wish everybody could be rich and famous so they could see that it doesn't account for anything and it doesn't add up to anything. And people quote that and then continue to pursue the exact same things and consume the exact same things in the same quantities. And
yeah.
So there's a recognition and then it's gone. And like life just sucks them back into the same pattern again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so true, man. So, so true. And, man, this has been a fascinating talk, man. It really has. And the show, I think, took a little bit different turn this week. But boys, we are 50 minutes into this thing. So if you guys are okay with it, I think we can wrap the ep there if there are not any closing comments. Anybody have anything else to add on this?
No, it's definitely a different turn for us. But
yeah,
I think it's a conversation definitely worth having. And I benefited from it. Listening to you guys reflect on these things is good for me. So it's because I can journal and write and think, but to hear other people in similar shoes process through it is really helpful. So hopefully it's good for listeners.
Yeah, most definitely, man. Most definitely. I appreciate it, boys, for sure. Well, this has been the glum episode of the Happy Rant podcast, in which we have wandered to and fro throughout this one topic in a very glum way. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
A powerful prayer life does not require hiking a mountain to be able to hear from God. God can meet us right in the middle of our busy lives to help, guide, and speak to us through prayer. I'm Christina Patterson, host of the Teach Us to Pray podcast, providing practical teaching and encouragement on how you can make prayer a natural and consistent part of your everyday life. I promise it won't require hiking a mountain, but you just might develop the faith to move one. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.